Congratulations! You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast, with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Mason Wazwaz.
We're out here at the Yerba Buena Gardens, and we've been having a hell of a morning. We tried to go to the press preview. Mason successfully did go to the press preview.
I was on time, 10 a.m., man.
For Tanya Bergara's new show at YBCA, go check it out. We're going to do more full reporting on that as perfectly legitimate reporters / journalists.
I'm now a fucking journalist. I felt very uncomfortable in there amongst all the actual, like, writers.
Charles Demaray.
Christian Frock. People from Datebook. Oh, yeah, Kelly Milner. Yeah, there were just a bunch of people there and made me feel very nervous.
They were very professional with big fuzzy muffs on their recording equipment.
Hey, we have fuzzy muffs on our recording equipment, but I just felt like, dude, do any of these... I was just thinking about our podcast and being like, we swear all the time. We talk shit. Sometimes we're not right about what we're talking about. We got to redact.
It's the factual inaccuracy that really is our trademark.
I think the show is going to be exciting, but I think it's going to be really challenging because so much of it depends on audience engagement or participation. And I always think that's really fucking hard.
I think that having the full time, so it's a school, it's like a freak school that Tanya Bergara is kind of like the
principal of the school.
And there's all different groups coming in from the Bay Area and beyond to...
So they invited students from 5 Bay Area colleges to participate in the school. It's an 8-week program. It's Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from like 4 to 6 or 7. It's all on their website.
And so some of those students are full-time, have to come to every session.
Yeah, and they're getting credit. It is open also to the public, but you're not necessarily required to be there for every class. Each week there's a guest instructor who will come through that's also on the website with different topics that they'll be talking about or discussing. So
yeah, so go check it out, and then we'll be giving it the full CPT treatment in a later episode.
Also, the show opens, the opening reception for the Tanya Bergara retrospective is this Friday, is tonight. Get to it.
We're out here, we're back at Maysoon's house, talking to writer, artist, filmmaker,
organizer,
activist, Celeste Chan.
Hi, it's so nice to be here.
I listened to some of your readings of you reading some of your writing, and it seems like a lot of your work is autobiographical.
Yeah, personal stories.
And that you also have a continuing current of mentioning Slater Kinney.
That brings me to the next project, which is called Art Heart, Children of Riot Girl. And it's a documentary film that I'm working on with filmmaker and friend Elliot Graney Salky. In it, we're looking at, I guess we're looking at how Riot Girl changed our lives, and it's also sort of a subjective history of what's the lineage of this subculture. And I think we're really interested in both going back and interviewing some of our inspirations and also our contemporaries. And I think looking at like what is it like to come from that, to come out as a queer teen in Olympia and to be really active in all these DIY projects, or to come out as a queer teen in Seattle and kind of get involved from a distance at first and then go try to catch that Riot Girl train.
Because you're from Seattle, right?
Yeah, I'm from Seattle.
I have extreme retroactive jealousy of that because I grew up in like a small town in Ohio, but I was super into Slater Kinney and like all that.
I know. Don't be jealous, bud. It's a time that can never be relived. It can never be recovered. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, I think something we're interested in with this documentary is not only what was so fabulous and inspiring then, but what were the missing pieces? Like what is possible now that wasn't possible then? I think, wow, when I think back to those times, I was a teen in the 90s, so I feel like, and hence the children of Riot Girl, I feel like I got involved and moved to Olympia in 2000, 2001, when so many people had actually left. So it was like, I'm trying to catch this train that may have... Did it vanish? No, there were still people there. There were still definitely, I'd say, the things that were most inspiring, like going to women's mud wrestling, going to going to secret cafes there. I feel like there'd be a secret
cafe.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
A person or collective would transform the house they were living in into a cafe for the day or the morning, and it would be a fundraiser. And so, say if this living room were it, maybe there would be like six different tables here and a menu of like, ooh, what can I order? Just like you were at a restaurant, but at someone's house. I don't know. I was a raver in Seattle as a teenager. So I think before I ever came out, I was basically hanging out on Broadway, the queer district, all the time. Like I remember thinking to myself, I'm not gay or anything. I just like being here. As I was carrying around this backpack with like rainbows bursting off of it and gold glitter trailing down my cheeks and just like totally subcultural. Totally queer looking. Like, I'm like, I'm ready for a queer party right here. I only don't know it yet. So the next thing we have is Queer Rebels Fest, and that's coming up June 30th and July 1st. It's also 7:30. It's also at African American Art and Culture Complex as part of the National Queer Arts Festival, and it's their 20th year now, so pretty exciting. So Queer Rebels was started in late 2008. KB Boyce and myself were just chatting at the kitchen table basically about like what is there for queer and trans artists of color. We know there's plenty in the Bay Area, but where are like the performing spaces? I know. What if we propose the show to be part of the Queer Arts Festival? What if we do this one-off show that's going to be called Queer Rebels of the Harlem Renaissance? And it kind of grew out of KB's performances as the drag king of the blues. From there, we basically expanded. We were like, wait, okay, we're doing this show that we are... So we're basically interested in promoting and creating spaces for queer and trans artists of color, and especially looking at our histories, and especially looking at what is the new art that queer and trans artists, mostly performing artists or filmmakers, literature, musicians, drag queens, please, all the drag queens and kings and non-binary drag. Non-binary yes, I love that non-binary royalty. You are right. I think we branched out from this one show and created Queer Rebels Fest to kind of bring together with really an interest in talking about cross-racial people of color solidarity and talking about, oh, how are our histories connected or different? Or if we put our histories and stories side by side, what emerges from that? We were a couple back then. KB's African-American and I'm Chinese and mixed race. We're not a couple anymore, but we still work together and collaborate. Gosh, we've also toured these experimental film programs. I think our most recent one was called The Fight for Home. And really looking at like, what's the definition of home for queer and trans people of color? And I think looking at ranging from Google apps with a drag queen screaming at Google buses in the middle of the street, Persia just being fabulous, a map of San Francisco evictions behind her, and she's like 6'6" in high heels. Ranging from that to other films such as You're Dead to Me. I guess I think of it as like, what is home but a haunting for a trans Chicano teen? And ranging from that to looking at Black Asian solidarity and Kevin Simmons' work from his solo show Orient. So all kinds of ranges of home. This year we're looking at, we're always looking at history, but we're looking at queer and trans histories of resistance. Either histories of, or what would you need for the future? What would you need for now? Got a range of art on that from Danny Nguyen talking about a lost tongue. No, quite literally, quite literally, a teacher rips out a student's tongue, throws it into a jar, and the student just watches it there on the desk. Yeah.
Go to that, listener. I'm interested in some of your writing and like balancing things like kitsch and drag and things that are kind of lighthearted, like party life and dancing and being young, and like the really intense like gravitas of like your family history. And like I heard the one that like starts out with your dad talking about how your grandpa was like waterboarded by the Japanese, and then it like goes back and forth between that history and like going to Japan and like
partying. Oh my god, yeah. I think really the inspiration for that was going back to it's interesting because I did go to Japan when I was I think 20, and that's when my dad told me the story about my grandfather was waterboarded during the Japanese occupation, and I hadn't known that. And yeah, I hadn't known that. I feel like the details were fuzzy. Like my dad was maybe 6 or so when that happened, so he doesn't know exactly when. But I think it was pretty random. Like I think from what I have both heard from my dad and read through my own research, I'm like, oh, whoa. That's, I mean, I guess any war is pretty atrocious. Like, yeah, I guess any war is pretty atrocious. And that feels like a weird segue to be like, so then when I went to Japan, I was like, why am I having such a good time here? How am I able to like have such a good time and be like young and queer and weird and trying to like look for subculture and finally like feeling at home in a place and feeling like, oh my God, everyone around me is Asian and that's like a first. And then against this history. So I was really interested in how do you reconcile those two things? And do you reconcile those two things? Maybe they just like exist side by side in a weird kind of way. Yeah, I feel like I keep trying to, wow. I feel like this ties to Queer Rebels too. Like, I feel like I keep trying to come back to this history to like resolve it or reconcile it or, or understand it or understand how can I be like this first world person going to these parties, getting to be queer, getting to have fun versus, I don't know. I mean, it's not like you should be living through war all the time. You should be like enduring this suffering. But I think I do keep coming back to this fact of like, oh, we almost didn't exist. And I'm sure that's true for like many families. That's actually not a unique story. That's not, you know, I think that many people have that in their history or have, have that, that migration is a response or like, is a response to war.
In the story with your dad, Celeste, It seemed like he was almost telling you like as a cautionary, like you're going to that place. is that a misinterpretation on my part?
Yeah, no, it was interesting. It did feel like, yeah, as a cautionary tale. I do feel like in a way maybe it was, or being like, Chinese and Japanese people hate each other. And I was like, why is that? And then he like tells me this totally intense story and I'm like, oh, I never knew that, or I didn't fully know. Yeah, what was that? I don't know. I think it's weird because I think maybe he was trying to. I'm not sure, but I think maybe he was trying to resolve for himself, like how do we go through this war, and now my kid's going to go to go to Japan. He didn't know I was going to party, but of course that's. I'm like, I'm here to rave in the mountainside of Japan with a friend, while. and how weird that contrast is between like that and my dad's family fleeing. Fleeing into my dad said it was the jungle of Malaysia to try to hide. I feel like I'm fuzzy on some of the details with my dad. Like he'll remember certain things, but not others. I'm like, what did it look like? What did it? So I've actually been doing my own research too about what was that like back then. It's interesting because I think this is a continuing project, part of a longer a longer book-length work called Regeneration. I debuted it as a one-woman show last year, and I'm continuing to work on it, looking at what final form it may take, if it will be a long-form written piece. I think it will. That's sort of looking at how do we resolve this past? How do we... And I think I'm less interested in documenting or showing the atrocities. I'm kind of... I try to read Iris Chang's book, The Rape of Nanking, and I basically couldn't get through it. I was like, it was so... I mean, I can see the value in putting it all out there, and in, I know she interviewed a lot of people to get those testimonies, so there is importance in shedding light on things that people would rather not see. However, God, I feel like a jerk saying this, however, I'd rather not get PTSD from reading this book. And I feel like there's something in that reworking of the past that I may be more interested in how does the past haunt the present versus the actual killings or the actual graphic details of that. I think I'm interested in how does that travel with us across time and across 5,000 miles to be here today.
When you're writing, are you, what kind of room do you write in?
Ooh, what kind of a locked room? No, just kidding. I guess I would say I write between my bed, which is like covered in this leopard fur. So I know. So here I am lounging, writing these totally intense stories and then crying. I mean, I don't know. I have to be honest, crying is a part of it, or it feels like there's something stored up there from the past that doesn't even belong to me that I am trying to understand or get out. It sort of feels like these histories are like an undigested slab of clay that lives inside me that I'm trying to do something with. So I write between on my bed to different cafes, and yeah.
Cool.
Like kind of a semi-open space.
Do you have any tips for young writers?
Ooh.
Especially like narrative writers.
Ooh, tips for young writers. I feel like it's so much about the relationship of your relationship to the work, or your relationship to taking yourself seriously and cultivating a practice. I think that there's so much that tells us not to do this, and like learning self-kindness or self-compassion, and especially when you're having feelings about what you're writing, because I think that that's going to happen. That's just part of the process. Really try to think of it as it's all clay. It all needs to be barfed up. It all needs to be barfed up so that then you can shape it. You really can't control the barf. So young writers.
It's good. It's working on me.
Young writers, don't try to stop it. You'll only get a stomach ache, and you'll feel gross. And yeah, a lot of it for me has been like cultivating practice, cultivating. Oh, and another, I guess I will also say tips that I've read that have really helped me were also to read twice as much as you write. Mm-hmm. I think reading, it's almost like the words get inside you. Mm-hmm. They get like sort of embedded into your skin or psyche. And I think for me also, it sometimes gives me permission to write what I need to write, to be like, oh, this person said this. Mm-hmm. It's out there in the world. Wait, I can do this too. The writer, novelist Tyeri Jones, also said there's no bad writing. It's just like she thinks of it as like a cardigan that's been misbuttoned, and you need to go in and do the work and fix it. And I'm like, that's genius. I love that.
Because you don't throw out the sweater just for being misbuttoned.
No. No.
Did we hit every event on our roadmap?
Wait, our roadmap of events. So this actually ties into advice for young writers and advice for myself too. This fall, I'm really thrilled to collaborate with the Queer Ancestors Project, and I'm going to be teaching writing workshops with them starting in September, going through September through May or June of next year. And it's for queer and trans writers 18 to 24. It's all levels.
I'm out of that age range.
Oh, don't worry. I have another thing to tell you about. That's all ages. Okay. So So that I'm really excited about. And I'm going to have two cohorts, one on Mondays and one on Saturdays. And then there's a Wednesday drop-in. That's, yeah. And then the other thing I have actually is all ages writing. It's going to be on Sundays at the library. And I'll also have a Wednesday drop-in that just come if you like, come and write. You will not be judged. There is no judgment, only timers to force us to write. Oh my God, timers have helped me so much. That, yeah.
Which library?
Oh, the downtown public library.
So will you have, how does that work? Like, do you have assignments for people to write, or are they coming with projects that they're already working on, or both, or?
Yeah. On Sundays, it will be assignments in class or different exercises in class. We'll also be reading right there. And then Wednesdays, you can bring whatever you want to work on. I think that's a really good space for that. And I'll also be hosting like the timed writings, which I kind of got that from Linda Berry. She does like these timed writing exercises. I feel like it's helped me so much. Thank you, Goddess Linda Berry.
She does listen to the show, so.
Okay.
JK, we always like to ask our guests on the show, is there anything else you would like listeners to know?
Yeah. Oh, I did want to say I'm involved with Foglifter Journal. I'm one of the editors, and we are a journal, an independent literary journal devoted to queer content and queer form. So we do publish a lot of experimental writing. It's not required, but pick up a copy and you can see writing that's transgressive or writing that's revelatory. We have a reading coming up that's on the, it is June 29th at Alley Cat Books. And it's a reading with trans writers with Foglifter Journal, and it's totally free. Please come out. I'll send you the link to Foglifter too. We're currently accepting submissions until July 15th.
Awesome. Thank you so much for chit-chatting with us today. And as always,
congratulations.
I love that.
That pigeon almost took me out.
And we'll be taking you out next week on another episode of Congratulations Pine Tree. But until then, from the bridge
to the other bridge
to the island in between, this has been
Congratulations Pine Tree.